Welcome to the Radiance Podcast, an open discussion on how Christian faith integrates with game development. Here are your hosts, M. Joshua and Thomas.
Welcome to the Radiance Podcast. I'm M. Joshua, your host, and I'm here with my co-host, Thomas. Thomas, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I was just at my high school for career day, and what's kind of funny about that is I was a terrible student, but apparently I'm a model citizen. So nice. I was there in the entrepreneurship kind of thing in the morning and just describing a bunch of things about owning businesses and stuff. And then after I schooled them in the classroom, I went to the cafeteria at the foosball table and I schooled them again. I beat all those little minor niners at foosball. It was one-on-one and then two against me and nobody could stop me.
That's awesome.
And well, we are here today with our special guest. I'm super excited that we have him. Today we have Nick Biondi. Is that how you say your last name? Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
All right, cool. Nick, thank you so much for being on the show. And you are the creator of a game called Heartlander. So if you wouldn't mind, how about you introduce a little bit about yourself and what your game is? How about that?
Okay, I like making sort of interesting games. I make a lot of prototypes. I'm just about finished with Heartlander, which is a four-player rocket wrestling game.
Ah, yes. Yes, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And now I've actually played Heartlander, and that's why I'm so excited to have you on the show. I played like one of your early builds that you had on Game Jolt. Do you call that your prototype, or what do you call that?
I would say that's like the first version of the game.
Cool.
Maybe 3 years ago now.
Oh, wow.
When I put that up.
I didn't realize that you've been working on it for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we had a bunch of guys at my house, and we all played it. And we play a lot of local multiplayer games, but I've never seen that much laughter fill the room. So you've got a really funny game on your hands.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to get into it. Just to give our listeners kind of an outline of what we're going to be doing today, we're going to get into some of our guests' experiences making his game. And we're going to find out what he's playing, and then we're going to get into kind of like his spiritual formation, how he got into games, and then we're going to get to our real core topic of the day, which is community. How do you build a game dev community? How do you grow in it? How do you serve in it? So many other things. So I'm really looking forward to getting into that question. What's something that you've played recently or that you've loved playing that you think might be really positive, like it could really contribute to Christian games in some way, shape, or form?
He means to Christian game developers.
Yeah, that's the right word. That's the right way of putting it. Thank
you. I could just sanctify some random game that Nick likes.
I mean, all I play lately pretty much is Awesome Knots, which is...
That is true.
Yeah, it's like a MOBA. It's like if you had Mario, but, you know, he could have a machine gun or drop bombs. It's pretty incredible. Super competitive. I think that I don't have anything to talk about with that game specifically, but
that's okay. I think you had also previously brought up The Binding of Isaac.
Yeah, that game was interesting because I've always, you know, wanted to make video games since I was 8, and I've been, you know, making games that for about that long. But I came to some conclusion at an early age that there was no way to make video games and, you know, really make a difference or glorify God unless you had Bible memorization stuff, right?
yeah. Or Bible trivia in some form. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I kind of thought
you're Moses shooting the word out of your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I never played any of those, you know, kind of Christian games and enjoyed them, really.
That's good. That's probably a good thing.
Yeah. But Binding of Isaac, I played that game, and there's, you know, a lot of, like, religious and Christian, obviously, overtones in that game. And I would say it's largely negative in a lot of ways. But one thing that kind of inspired me about it was that the game was popular and it does, you know, have these themes in it. And so I guess that game inspired me to realize that, you know, you can still have Christian themes in a game and have people respond to it positively. And so even though that's kind of a weird place to get that message, I think that's where I got it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's fantastic. I mean, Binding of Isaac originally came out in November of 2011, and I remember being there thinking to myself, like, to me, it's like the weirdest possible game. Like, here we go with something that's like, it's about child abuse, it's about religious abuse, it's about, like, here, you get the power of Christ to attack enemies with bloody mm-hmm. tears, and, like, it's super, super weird and gross, but at the same time, it's permission. Mm-hmm. It's permission for... I really love that idea that it's permission for people to bring up faith in games.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's interesting because I had a similar kind of experience playing Bioshock Infinite. Kind of the first intro-y part. Have you played that, Nick?
I have.
Yeah. So just that first part when you're like kind of going through the cathedral and everything, and then he's like, you must be baptized in order to enter. Mm-hmm. It was cool. It had the right tone to it, right? It wasn't making fun. It was... deadly serious. It was part of the narrative and it was cool. And then later on, when you get to the end, to the ending,
spoilers,
there's a baptism there as well.
Okay.
And and it was just it was really powerful. It really spoke to me about my own baptism. And maybe other people's mileage varied or whatever, but I had that same moment Nick did. It was like, this is a popular game that people are really responding to, and it has mine silly or confrontational religious imagery in it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was just treating religious stuff seriously. And I was like, hey, we've arrived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We're welcome here. Yeah. I think that's super huge. Cool. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up, Nick. Yeah. I mean, you brought up the Binding of Isaac before our show for listeners who are like, how'd this get here? But yeah. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate you bringing that to the table. So my second question for you, Nick, is, what's your spiritual formation been like? I guess that's a really broad question, but how old were you when you started following Jesus? What was that like? And what have been some of the high points of your spiritual formation?
I grew up in a Christian home, so the question of whether God exists and who he is was never a question for me. But, you know, later on when I moved out of the house, I think I was maybe 25 or 26, you know, and you're looking at a lot of different debates about the formation of the universe and all that. And, you know, it got to a point where I had to decide, you know, I thought if I was, you know, born in India, I would not be a Christian, right? So
yeah,
I had to seriously think about whether or not it's true or not. And so I remember the feeling of stepping out and asking that question was, like, very scary for me. And I imagine it's the same for people who grew up in a, you know, materialist family or whatever. Like, having to question your, you know, basis of reality. It's a scary thing, wherever you come from. I think there's, you know, many ways to answer that question. But for me, it was kind of, you know, scientific. That's how I did it, right? I researched it. And I remember, you know, asking God to, show me if he exists, and then going out with the possibility that he didn't. Uh-huh. But through that... you know, after doing a lot of studying and asking a lot of questions, I really, you know, I firmly believe that God exists, you know, not just because it satisfied my scientific questions, but also because I, you know, found God in a real way, you know, in a very personal way.
Yeah.
And, you know, that caused me to have a lot of questions about, like, why is it that I went to church and I never found God until I questioned him and all that. But that being said, I think for me, you know, questioning God was the way that I really found him. So, you know, when people want to question God, I think that's a great thing. I believe now that, you know, all who seek finds, right?
Yeah.
So I'm more afraid of people not questioning their faith and questioning it. As long as they're honest in it, I think that they will, you know, it's just my experience that I feel like they will find.
Yeah.
It. What was one of those scientific kind of answers that you found so compelling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't any one thing really. I think part of it was, you know, like searching through the Bible, like, is this book 100% true? Right. And I'm not somebody who's believes that every single word is completely, absolutely true. And maybe it is, right? But for me, that's not the most important thing, because finding God in a personal way is more important than that. But just, you know, a lot of things like the order of creation based on, you know, how people think that, that things evolved. The creation of the earth, you know, I mean, you know, I believe that, you know, the Bible says in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and, you know, then he floats over the earth and it's null, you know, it's without form and void. And so I know a lot of people would disagree with me, but I think that the universe was created, you know, billions of years ago, and then God came and you know, created a new creation on the earth. But that's just my, you know, my belief. But I was very surprised to see a lot of the scientific things in the Bible that were true. You know, the earth being a sphere and all that thing, that all really helped me out. But yeah. In the end, it was really the search that God revealed himself to me in a very, very personal way. That's really where I found it eventually, by, you know, questioning and looking into it.
And so can you expand a little bit more on the personal way that God like connected with you in that sense? Cause I like what you're saying about the path getting there and how the questioning is a huge part of that. But what was the personal transition like?
I just remember, you know, after, you know, seeking him for a while, and I remember I just, you know, asked him a question, and then I just felt like he was there, you know, and like, almost like, it's really hard to explain, but it's almost like there was a presence right there.
Yeah.
And that presence followed me for a couple of years very, very strongly. So there was no question of whether he existed. It was just, I knew it. It's hard, you know, it's hard to explain, but the feelings that I have were that I was completely loved, that he was completely proud of me 100%, and that there was a feeling that this being was my father. Those are the things that I felt that were just, I just knew that.
Yeah, and that's awesome. We have our other main question, which is how did you get into game dev?
When I was 8 years old, I was a big fan of Weird Al Yankovic, as many 8-year-olds are. Yes.
I just saw him on an episode of The Goldbergs where he plays himself in the 80s. It's great.
Yeah, I hear he's made quite a comeback recently.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I tried to design a game on, you know, I had a piece of paper and it was based on a song where he makes the Eiffel Tower, or that talks about the Eiffel Tower made out of waffles. And so, you know, I was thinking about making a platformer like that. And that was the first time. But after that, like I always wanted to make games. Platformer. Yeah. Yeah, it would have been crazy.
Who doesn't want to jump on waffles?
And since then, you know, I've been, you know, learning anything I can to make games. I started in BASIC and, you know, made a little dungeon crawler. That was my first game. And then made a network game of like Tetris that was used. Each piece had like magnetic poles so they would float above. And I don't know. I've just been making prototypes since then. In the last, you know, 5 years or so, making games has... The tools are incredible now, you know, how fast you can make games. But I've always made games since then.
Awesome. Very cool.
How did you go full time?
I like to, I know me and Thomas have been talking a lot about conversations lately, and deep, you know, conversations and, you know, shallow conversations, and how talking to people is like rolling the dice. But I like to ask people, you know, start deep, quick, usually. Like, and one question I like to ask, which I hear they ask a lot of people in the Bay Area, is, you know, like, what would you do if you had $3 million? It used to be $1 million, but now, you know, because of inflation, we're working our way up.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, when you ask somebody what they do for a living, that, you know, often doesn't tell you much about them.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would say they travel. You know, but me, I get enough excitement by thinking about creating my own worlds that I don't feel like I need to travel. Right. But
I mean, we are. That's one of the things I say in games writing, is that good games writing is good travel writing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I like that. And, you know, I would always ask people this question, and then, you know, I would think about it, like, what would I do? And I'd make video games, just, you know, small games with a small team, where you have some creative input. And, you know, I'm conservative by nature. I'm super frugal, and I'd rather save my money than spend it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'd been, you know, saving my shekels for years. And at one point I realized that, you know, like, maybe I could do it now. And so I thought, you know, like, what is holding me back? Just my fear of
stepping out.
Yeah, stepping out. And so eventually, you know, I just did it.
Yeah.
And then I found more and more that a lot of times when you ask people that question, a good portion of the people, their answer of what they do with $3 million, they can actually do right now. You know, so I did it. And
yeah,
that was about 2.5 years ago. I've been, you know, doing contract work and stuff.
So that was 2014 then?
I think so. End of 2014, probably.
So that was basically after we, like, just after we met, because we met, I think, July of 2014.
Yeah, I think like my first, yeah, it was like a week or like really soon after I quit was when I went to a Christian Game Developer Conference. That was like the right CGDC. At that same time. Yeah.
Cool. That's and awesome. So that's where you guys met.
Lunch at the same table or something. Mm-hmm.
And now you guys two sat down on the same table and Nick says, you know what games I don't like? RPGs. And Thomas says, you know what games I don't like? Couch multiplayer games.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we've been friends ever since.
Oh, that's hilarious. And for listeners, Nick is, of course, making, you know, he already said that he's making a couch multiplayer, and Thomas is making a mage simulator that's like an RPG. So,
but what's even funnier is that Nick is now helping me make my role-playing game.
Yeah, that's... Exactly. Yeah, when you told me that last week, I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool.
It's an awesome game. I get to sit down at my desk every day, and I'm just really excited to work on it. This is it's an amazing game.
That's awesome.
And I pay Nick to say that.
It'll be $10.
You've said something, the specific word in the description for your game, Hardlander, that grabbed me is when you said this is a rocket wrestling game. Mm-hmm. I could try to articulate it myself, but I'd rather hear from you, straight from the horse, so to speak.
Okay. The Hardlander started out like many, many prototypes that I've made. You know, it's a game that I'm going to make in a day or two and uh-huh. try to get the core mechanic down as fast as possible. And, when we made, Hardlander, I just couldn't stop laughing when I first played it. And so
I just
couldn't stop working on it. And, you know, I don't like to work on with my own projects. I don't like to keep working on it if it's not exciting to me. So, you know, I don't have a problem putting it down and, you know, waiting a while, a month, a year, or whatever, until I get excited about it again. So Hardlander has been, you know, it started out super, super difficult, super top heavy. It'd be like flying around a broom, you know, by its handle. You'd land on the ground and fall over and crash.
Yeah.
But... after playtesting it a ton, you know, I try to show it as much as I can. I found that, like, maybe it's more frustrating than fun for a lot of people. So it's really evolved over time. And so before, there was no wrestling aspect to it. But over time, I basically added a mechanic where you can hold down the trigger button. You play it with controllers, and it allows you to close your landing gear. So it's kind of like pinchers, crab pinchers or something.
Uh-huh.
And you can grab somebody and then maybe like fling them into a laser beam or...
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, or into gears or something. So you're sort of flying around, and it's a party game. So you're just...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I played it, I loved how clumsy it was at first. And that aspect of, like, it's really hard, even when you're playing by yourself, it's really hard not to crash.
Yeah, you're generally, when you first start, you're pretty much playing against yourself because it's completely physics-based, you know, it's like a Kerbal Space Program type of stuff, you know. So learning to fly it is like, it's like if somebody stuck you in the cockpit of a helicopter and said, go for it, you know. You have to crash a few times to figure it out, and that's kind of, you know, how the game is.
Yeah, I love that about it. And so it's cool that you added the landing gear component, because that makes perfect sense for grappling while you're in the air and trying to mess people up. That's really cool. I like it.
Yeah.
Cool. So what's the expectation for delivery? When am I going to be able to, you know, and our listeners, when are they going to be able to play a completed for sale build?
I mean, all the features are in, and almost all the art is in, so it's pretty much ready for early access. It needs a few things. It needs a good trailer, good music, and a little bit of art and sound effects, and then it's ready for early access. The reason I want to do early access is there's only really you know, me and an artist for the most part, and we right. can't test it on every computer or anything. So we want to release it at a, you know, a good price and be able to take some time to get it, you know, perfect before we release it for sure.
Yeah, that's smart to make sure that you're able to get all the testing out of the way and yeah. refinement so that you're able to hand off a really completed project. Because I know it's amazingly hard to make a really solid PC release.
Yep.
Cool. Cool. So what is your target window for early access?
It could be ready, you know, in a couple weeks, but I'm pretty busy working on Archmage, so we'll, you know, it's kind of floating, we'll say that, okay. at the moment.
So anywhere from, like, April to June, you want to say?
Yeah, it could be even later than that, depending on...
Okay.
Yeah, because one of the problems, one of the problems is, what if I release it, right, and then there's a big bug? And then, you know, I'm working on Archmage and all of a sudden these people are just screaming at me the whole time. And I'm just like, you know, working. And then I'm like looking at my emails and like, you know, I don't want to let anybody down, you know, like
sure.
That really frightens me to like release something that's going to disappoint people. So
yeah. I need to eat their hard drives.
Yeah. yeah, exactly. So I feel like I need to have like a block of, you know, block of space set apart where if there's a problem, I can really get in there and just, you know, sink into it and fix it right away. So,
yeah.
You know, I'll need to wait for that window.
Awesome. Well, that's super duper exciting. And the thing that excites me the most about Hardlander is that it's a great community building party game. Like, it brings complete strangers together in a way that just in my short playing of the early alpha or early prototype that you provided, everyone in the room was just excited to play it and laughing hysterically. To our key topic, which is community. And so, Thomas, if you could explain a little bit why Nick really caught your attention in terms of community.
Yeah, sure. So Nick and I met about 2 years ago, I guess, at the CGDC conference. And I don't know what would have happened if I sat at a different table. He's helped me a lot, teaching me Unity things and stuff. I would often go to him for questions and whatnot. And he was always really open and just willing to help and stuff. And that was pretty cool. And especially for free. And that was really nice. And so I would have these Skype video conversations where he would be like walking me through something, or we'd be like troubleshooting something. It'd be these random people walking across the background. And I'm like, who's that? And he's like, it's just some guy. Like, oh, okay. And so it's not a roommate, and it's, you know, not a friend, and it's not even necessarily someone I think he invited over, just random people show up and start walking around his house. And so I asked him about that, and that's when I found out a little bit, not a, I guess a lot, but that he's really involved in just the game dev community in Portland, which seems to have a pretty big active one considering kind of the size of the city and whatever. And so yeah, Nick is just really involved in that, and I'd like to kind of hear more about that, and because I'm a lone wolf developer myself, right? So it fascinates me, and I don't know, I'm kind of encouraged by it, hey, maybe I should go and get more involved. So I'd like to hear more about Nick's involvement.
Yeah, so Nick, how did you come to have a house where people are dropping in and dropping out and that sort of thing?
You know, I think that God just put us in a place where, you know, our house is kind of like a hostel type of thing. Like, we have an extra bedroom, and anybody knows that if they need a place to stay, they, you know, can stay there. We're conveniently located 5 miles from the airport, so we do a lot of airport runs. And also, I work very late hours. You know, I usually go to bed around 4 now, which is earlier than it used to be.
And so, what time are you up usually?
I wake up at the crack of 1 p.m. a little before that, grab some food. Nice. And, you know, it's not like something I set up. It's just that we think that it's kind of, you know, a way that God uses us by sending people, you know, our way. And, you know, I don't feel like I am in a position or should, like, you know, preach at people. But I live in Portland, and the idea of religion is people are very hostile to the idea of religion here. You know, they've heard the stories and they've seen people judge them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, most people eventually find out that I'm a Christian. But for the most part, I just want to, you know, love on people and, you know, feed them and let them know that, you know, let them know that I love them and I care about them. And, you know, maybe when they find out I'm a Christian, they won't not be so hostile to them, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to argue with you when you're feeding them.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And you said that you, it's we, so who's the we? Are you married?
I am married.
Cool. So it's you and your wife?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any kids?
No.
No kids yet?
Not yet.
Cool. How long have you been married?
I think it's maybe 6 years. Cool. But I'm not sure about that. Usually my wife's around and she would give you the number. But it's cool. You know, it's been wonderful. I'm very blessed.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been able to really establish your house and just be in unity about how your house works together and that you're a real team up in that way.
Actually, that's a good question. How does your wife feel about all these drop-in people, game developers?
Yeah. She's great. I mean, she's the one who usually feeds everybody. So, and, you know, she really compliments me, like, in so many ways. I'm not very good with the calendar, so or picking up my phone all the time. So a lot of times, you know, when people are going to come over, they'll call her, or maybe they won't. They'll just show up. But she takes care of all of that stuff. In fact, a lot of my friends don't even call me. They'll just call her. And I was going to say, so I, you know, I'm not, I don't try to be really overt because I think about, you know, Christianity, because I think people are hostile to the message. But all of my mugs do have Bible verses on them. So I let my mugs do the talking, you know.
That's actually a really, really great standpoint, a really great approach. I mean, like, one of the things that we as American Christians, I think, really suck at in general is hospitality. So the fact that you're doing that and that's part of, like, just the way, like, that's a really great introduction point. Here's some coffee. Here's a Bible verse on their coffee. Oh, yeah, it just naturally comes up because you're already serving somebody. Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome.
And I'm not interested in getting somebody to be part of the Christian club, you know what I mean? Because, sure. I mean, religion is, like, our poor attempt of exemplifying God. And, you know, I think we are people, so we mess it up. Like, I'm interested in having people come into, like, a real relationship with God. And
starting with love and inviting them over to your house is definitely a great start.
Yeah. I want them to have a relationship with God. You know, I don't know that I'd rather them know God than go to church, I guess, if they have to have one or the other.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Have you always lived in Portland?
No, I grew up in Southern Oregon in a little town of like 110,000 called Medford, Oregon.
Cool.
And so when did you move to Portland?
Right after college. I moved up to Portland and I stayed at my buddy's mom's house for a couple weeks and got a job in insurance.
Like selling insurance?
Insurance programmer.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that makes sense. So how did you get involved initially in this game development community?
A guy by the name of Will Lewis started it up in, Portland University, PSU. And that he would meet with some people in a room. And there was, I don't know, there was maybe like 10 people that would show up. And this is like maybe 3.5-4 years ago. And I started going there. And I'd always, you know, the idea of working with somebody like an artist and making games was something that never was available to me in Medford. And so when that, you know, I was Googling it, eventually that popped up. So I went to, I think, the second meeting they ever had. Mm-hmm. And it's grown. It's gigantic now. It's there's almost 2,000 people on the Facebook page and like a Pig Squad meeting, stands for Portland Independent Gamers. can have anywhere from like 100 to 300 people showing up. So there's a lot of really amazing stuff going on.
That's awesome. Yeah, I just recently, completely unrelatedly, talked to Fernando Ramayo from the game Panoramical, he's an Argentinian developer living in Portland. Mm-hmm. So it's just funny to see how the, like, random Portland has just an obviously really, really robust indie game dev community. So that's really cool. And how did that lead to, like, what was the thing that initialized your desire to invite people to your house and make your house kind of like a co-working space? Is that accurate to say it's like a co-working space?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, we have people come over and they work on stuff or, you know, play games or whatever. I think part of it is, like, I'm a hermit, you know?
Yeah.
Like I'm most comfortable, like, sitting, you know, on my kitchen table. with my computer and my wife. And, you know, like, I really love, I love people, you know, I have a lot of good friends and I don't go anywhere. So like, yeah. Having them come to me is like perfect, right?
And, so maybe said differently, if you were under house arrest, you wouldn't notice.
Exactly. Yep. I mean, I rarely see the sun if it's not, you know, for like an hour every morning.
Oh man, yeah. No, I can actually really understand that. I just started really doing the indie game trailer thing over about a year ago, and so I am finding myself not remembering the last time I left my house. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I'm like afraid of the world or anything like that, or I'm not suggesting that you are either. It's just that aspect of like, I'm really content to like be at home, and I have access, like you said earlier, like we have access to all these different worlds without getting our butts off of our seats. Why would we want to?
Exactly.
Cool. What are some of the practical building blocks of community that you've used? Like, so you've specifically built community with game devs in general. Would you say that those are and obviously you've expressed that they're like people of varying different beliefs. Mm-hmm. Have you built a lot of community specifically with Christian devs, or is it just much more of a open, like, I just want to be in community kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's mostly a community thing. I mean, if there's, you know, religion doesn't really come up right away usually. And, you know, the fact is, you know, there's great, just as many great Christian people as non-Christian people, right? We're all creations of God, and we're all wonderful and terrible at the same time. So, you know, I don't like necessarily seek out like, you know, Christian people, although it is very like, it feels really good to be around other Christian people that share your beliefs for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the Holy Spirit tends to really, you know, inhabit the midst in different ways around people who are, you know, for lack of better, well, there's probably better terms, but just alive in Christ, just full of life and wanting to come alive with others. Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned in the building of community? Some of the biggest hurdles and roadblocks, I'd say.
I mean, I think the most important thing to community is just showing up, for uh-huh. one. I love to like help people out and show people unity and stuff. So anytime somebody's interested in that, I'm just like, you know, stuck on their shoulder, because I just love teaching people unity, so I help with that. But you know, I think the most important thing is really showing up. Like, I'm not, you know, Will Lewis is the guy who really put in the time, and you know, he would say the same thing. Like, consistency is the most important thing. You uh-huh. say you're going to be somewhere and you show up, and 10 people show up, and you do it again, and 10 people show up again. But you know, the 10th time you do it, 100 people show up. So it's like, consistency is very important.
Cool. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So when you go to like that pigs group, is that what it's called? It's pigs?
Pig squad, yeah.
Yeah, pig squad. So when you go to pig squad, like, what happens there? Like, kind of paint that picture for us.
So it's always changing depending on what people want. You know, there's like a monthly meeting for people who are making board games. There's this one thing called the drink and draw where they go to a really big bar, and people just set up their games and people play them, and there's, you know, 300 or more people will show up to one of those. And the idea in that one is that people can play test their games, and then other people that aren't necessarily making games but are artists, they can come and draw fan art for them. So it's kind of like bringing in the wider community into it. They just did a Cartoon Network game jam, which was Cartoon Network flew in. They rented out a big area, and then it was a 48-hour game jam. There were 52 teams. The top 16 teams get $3,000, and then one or more of those gets a contract to finish one of the games. So there's a lot of really kind of exciting things going on. Like, that hasn't been done before, but
and that's really Cartoon fun. Swim in particular, and not specifically like a Cartoon Network, not specifically Adult Swim.
No, it was just Cartoon Network, and I think they own, the parent company owns both of them. But
okay, cool. Yeah, I had known that Adult Swim was making games, but I didn't realize Cartoon Network was also doing the same thing. So
yeah, they've made a few games, and they're doing it in a pretty interesting way. They create a universe, and they create a ton of characters, and then everybody got a new character. Mm-hmm. So everybody's using a different character, and they have to make a game about that. And it was really cool.
That is really cool. That explains why Will Lewis has Cartoon Network characters on his Twitter background.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Very Do you know
cool.
how you placed in the game jam?
We don't know yet. There was a 2 week period where people could polish it, and that ends on Monday.
Oh wow!
So I don't know how long after that they'll make a decision, but I really enjoyed it. I think we made a really good, really good, really polished game in that amount of time. So I'm really proud of my team members.
I've heard from people that go on mission trips. Actually, I've gone on some mission trips myself, so I guess I know this as well, that when you go to bless others, you actually end up getting blessed more yourself. Obviously, you're helping out a lot of people, teaching them Unity things, talking game development. Can you share with us some of the things, advantages or benefits you received kind of from the group?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started going to Pig Squad not with the intention of blessing other people, but to be blessed myself in the form of getting artists to collaborate with me. It was never an intention to go in and bless people necessarily, but I think having a community when you're making games is really, really important, because it's really hard to see the problems in your game. In fact, it's always hard to see the problems in your game unless you have other people play it. So one of the best things outside of the amazing friendships that I've gained through Pig Squad is being able to play test constantly. Like Hardlander was, I thought it was hilarious and fun, but it was frustrating for a lot of people. So by play testing it over and over again, whether I take people's advice or not, you can't argue with how long somebody holds the controller, right? When they first play the game.
Yeah.
So you try some new things and people play it less or more, and you keep doing that. And now if I show it anywhere, there's always people that will play it for over an hour everywhere I show it.
Nice.
So I would not have been able to do that without Pig Squad, without community. And it kind of comes for free. As long as you show it a lot, your game's going to get better. So playtesting often is really, really valuable.
Cool. And obviously you can only really playtest a couch multiplayer game with other human beings.
Yeah, you need a couch, right? And players.
Yeah.
And I think you got an opportunity through Ouya through that group?
Yeah, there's a few people in the group that have been working with Ouya. Bob, who works for Ouya, he's hilarious. When we went down to Eugene for IndieCon, he had a hot tub party where he invited people to sit in a hot tub and bubble around. So that was pretty funny. And apparently they're doing that at GDC. When does that start? In a week or something? And they're doing a hot tub party 2016, which I'm unfortunately not going to be part of. But Ouya is really great. They sold to Razer, so there's still opportunity to work with them with Razer, and there's a few people that are doing that. But one of the things was great is that they showed my game at PAX. They gave me tickets to go to PAX and IndieCade, which was a really awesome experience. And that's another thing, getting involved with Ouya and then knowing other people, there's other devs that are now involved with Ouya, because I was involved with them. And so and that happens both ways, right? Just being around other people making games just gives you more opportunities.
Oh yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I can appreciate that a lot. And I mean, and Ouya was, kind of, from my perception, the thing that Ouya did really, really well was couch multiplayer. Mm-hmm. So that makes definitely a lot of sense. I mean, that's how Towerfall got its start and so many others. Cool.
Exactly.
What are some of the biggest struggles, the struggles that you've faced in trying to walk out community with other people, or staying connected, and some of the things that have been just like, it all sounds like it's come super duper natural to you, but I can't imagine that everything's been you get along perfectly with everybody.
Yeah. I pretty much get along with everybody. One of the things I think if Christians can be two things, they should be loving and they should be forgiving. And I think a lot of times when people, they do something wrong, there's always a reason for it. And one of the things, in a community, the bigger community gets, the biggest problem you're going to have is going to be gossip, right? People talking bad about other people.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I try to do is anytime I hear that, I try to, you know, I always go to bat for whoever that person is, trying to be the peacemaker as much as possible. And because they can really, you know, if gossip gets in the community and it points towards one person, that person is going to get destroyed. You know what I mean? And a lot of times it amplifies it. Like maybe they probably did something wrong, but now you have all these people who don't like them when they don't really know them. And so that's one thing I'm really sensitive about is when I hear that, I try to stamp it out as much as I can.
Can you give an illustration of how you've stamped it out? Because I think that that's really helpful. Because I think that, you know, we as Christians hear a lot about gossip, but we don't like talking about gossip because you don't want to talk about God. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to talk about the gossipers because then you're talking about the gossip and then you're gossiping.
Yeah, that's the problem with it, right? I think it's just like, you know, people should, when they hear somebody talking bad about somebody else, they need to, you know, just interject and say, I like that person, whether you do or not. I'm sure there's something we can work out, and just try to go to bat for whoever that is every time.
That's absent. Yeah. Go to bat for the person who's absent. I really like that. That's a really good point.
So I live in the Toronto area. I'm told there's a big game development community here, but I've never left my house. And so, you know, I have gone to a couple of these community meetings, and usually they were put on by like financial groups or something that are talking about, you know, tax breaks or how to get grants or like those kinds of things. I've gone to those.
That's a Canadian thing for sure.
Yeah, I guess so. We have a lot of taxes and we have a lot of grants.
Yeah, you guys are really nice to game developers. In Pennsylvania, they're like, what's game dev?
Yeah, so anyway, I've gone to some of those kinds of groups, and it didn't really, I didn't really connect with anybody kind of,
sure.
Right? I know it exists, I know it's there, but I haven't like made the effort in order to go there. So what would you tell someone like?
What kind of tips and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think not every, you know, city has the same game developer groups. And if it's not working for you, then you need to start your own, basically. The problem with that is it's going to take a few years of being consistent. I know, Thomas, you'd be awesome at starting that because you're, you know, really good at talking to people, and you're a good guy, and I think people would respond to that. But it takes a lot of work. So, like, in Portland, you know, Will Lewis started it, and he showed up every time consistently, and then it just grew. So I would say I think if you already have a community going where there's people showing up, then you should show up because you'll help that grow. If it's not there, then you either create it yourself, or, you know, you find those people, you know, and, you know, technology like we have now with Skype and stuff like that, you can start your own. As I said, your tendrils are wide already. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I think that that's really key. Like for me, I met Thomas through the Theology Gaming Group, which is not directly or overtly dedicated to game development in any way. It's just people who love talking about Jesus things, the Bible, and games, and having pretty open conversations. I'm one of the kind of pseudo editors there, I was interesting because Thomas just kind of comes along, and I didn't even realize that he was a game developer. And long story short, we now have a podcast together.
That's right. So,
I've that's not the only relationship. There's tons of people that I met through that small little, there's only like 200 people in that group. But I think that because of the availability of conversation, I've only actually met like two people physically in person from that group. But because of the ongoing conversation, that's one thing that's developed. Mm-hmm. So there's online relationships for sure. And talking to people who know somebody and that sort of thing have been super huge for me. Mm-hmm. But Nick, would you say that that's something that is as essential for you, is the online side of things? And what are some community things that you've done that have worked online-wise?
That's a good point. I mean, you guys are starting community right now with this podcast. and all the things, you know, add together to enrich the whole landscape of, you know, the game dev community. I think mostly, you know, trying to help people out, you know, like I love solving Unity problems and stuff. So, mm-hmm. you know, if somebody needs computer help, you know, I love to Skype with them. I've done that a lot. you know, there's other communities like TIG Source and things like that. You can get together and, you know, share your games and get people's thoughts. Definitely there's like different levels of intimacy you get with that. With TIG Source, more like, you know, hey, here's my game. You know, say something good about it. It's really what you're saying when you're on TIG Source, right? You know, I think everybody's workflow when they're making games is totally different. And it's like when people are saying, this is how you make games or everything, or this is how you design this. It's like, really, in the end, you know, if we all spent our whole lives doing game dev, our workflows would be totally different. Our communities would be, our ideal communities would be totally different. So I think finding what works for you and, you know, finding needs you have and getting those satisfied in certain communities. And that always involves giving some of yourself as well. That's part of it. I don't think there's a one size fits all to community or game dev. I think it's more about just trying different things and finding what works and building that network of community.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really great point. And I think I really liked all of what you said, but I want to specifically hone in on what you said about different levels of intimacy. Because I would say that, like, I only know you because of Thomas. But, you know, just having you on here and just seeing your face and things along those lines, I feel like much more connected. And I really, really like your emphasis on just showing up. Like, that's so, so huge.
I had another question for Nick. You know, like, game development is, I think it's kind of an isolating sport in that it seems really designed for introverts because it involves a lot of sitting by yourself quietly doing something, right? Like, that is not an extrovert type activity, right? I could never imagine my wife as a game developer. She'd right. up out of her chair every 3 minutes. You know, very easy to just do these long hauls by yourself and whatever. So it sounds like I'm asking the same thing, but I'm trying to ask it, I guess, differently. So what has the community kind of meant to you? You know, how has it helped you not get so, like, blinders on and so isolated?
I mean, it's done a ton for me. Like I said, you know, I'm kind of hanging out in my hovel. So, like...
Your hobbit hole?
Yeah, like, meeting amazing people in the community and, you know, people that are willing to take the effort to come, like, visit me and stuff. It's really helped me to keep, you know, a healthy social life without having to to, you know, get out of my seat that often. So it's really helped me balance those things. I'd like to make a comment also about, like, game dev. I think it's so new because the tools and everything are so good now, and there's, you know, we have Steam and we have ways to release our games now. I think the introvert is still, for many of the games, is really, you know, an advantage to making games. But I think that'll change as we find more and more people making games. You know, like, there's that Johann Sebastian Joust game where it's super simple about, you know, position and movement. And, like, you got to play test the heck out of that game. So he was probably spending his time, like, going into parking lots throwing, like, you know, move controllers at people, right? So, yeah. like, as soon as you come up with a, you know, a paradigm about what game dev is, you give it 10 months and it's going to be different, right?
So. Yeah. So I really appreciate your availability and being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I would love to continue talking, but I think we probably have to wrap up the show because Thomas has to go play. What is it? Wall ball? No. It's ball hockey. That's right.
That's right. Ball hockey.
I hope that we can talk to you again, maybe after Hardlander comes out, and hear some of your experiences with the process of going through early access and what that's all like. But thank you so much for talking about community. Once again, this has been the Radiance Game Dev Podcast. If you've liked our show, please give it a 5-star rating. Also, tell people about it. Tell anybody that you know who's interested in how faith can affect game development. Thank you guys for listening.
Thanks for having me.